You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, 24 hours of radio art from 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. For the next 30 minutes, you'll be hearing S-Star's Tacleron 1999 from a split tape with AJ Cornell on IO Sound. Afterwards, we'll be hearing another piece from S-Star, interspliced with an interview with the composer himself. Recovering long-lost tapes of the N-30 protests from the Battle of Seattle, S-Star composes a tense montage from the police scanner, combating surveillance and arrest activities with frequency and noise manipulation. Each side presents a full immersion in overhearing behind-the-scenes banter, providing the craven ear with its own surveillance apparatus, and seducing the listener with the unheard discourses of secrecy and power, personal and public.
Thank you. 6-1 was up next.
Better, 7-6-9, we have about 20 of us here, multi-agency. Yes, they come up to us here at 7 and Pine, so we get clarification. Do they want us to try and hold the line here, or drop back to the pipe?
Arriving
from the north on 6. Arriving. They have a negative. They will not have access from the north. They need to flank this and come in from the south or the west.
Can you get
us
to coast to the pipe from the unit with a 2 calling?
Do that.
Hi, Adam, you can take it.
Union, where do you want us?
On Union, one block south. And repeat again, 901.
This is to secure 2nd Avenue as far south as possible. The east side of the road only, and advise the pedestrian traffic as well.
Adam, spot arrived, 9 Adam, disregard. 9 Charlie, you say you have protesters behind you?
I got most of them in front of us. We got a small contingent behind us and flanking us. We have mid-block in front of the Levi's store here. I'm sick.
Okay, they're mid-block. They're at Pike and Pine on 6th. A small group behind them flanking them.
7 Adam, we'll cover that for you.
Bye, Paul. Thank you.
Do you want us to hold 6th and Pine?
Yeah, I believe that that would be the best option to get them northbound. I don't want them going up by the convention center if possible.
Boys, we're doing several times in the corner here. Several times in the corner.
Good one, Mike. Dan, make sure not to go north of Pine right now.
Turn 3-2, we want them to move north of Pine. You do not want us to move north of Pine.
Right, I don't want you guys to get overextended north of Pine quite yet, please.
We were following a couple hundred who were westbound on Madison at 2nd.
5, Adam.
Westbound on Madison at 2nd Avenue. They appear to be stopping at 2nd and Madison.
And I'll start preparing for that. Where would you like them to stage?
Easy access form will be east of 6th Avenue near 7th and Pine.
Please see. And 9 Charlie, are you guys okay there?
9 Charlie, at this point we are. We're just maintaining the line here.
Thank you.
that the protesters wearing all black and the black scarves through the alley, 500 block between Pike and Pine, for information.
500 block Pike?
The group is now headed southbound on 3rd Avenue across the Union.
Southbound 3rd Avenue Union. We're sent to Seneca to the Vine Poles there. One package to be picked up at 4th and Seneca for a 6 County resident.
Command 37 to copy. I'll just take information on our bandwidth of occupants over the past 2 minutes. Spot seen westbound, East Madison, East Spring Street, break. Past 5 minutes, spot seen westbound, East Madison, East Spring. Described vehicle is a psychedelic painted flowered van. Occupants described as several people who appear to be dressed like law enforcement. They're wearing black riot gear. Possibly a couple carrying what appears to be grenade launchers. They also have driven up in a white van that entered the other vehicle. East Madison and East Spring. This is the last seen west of the Sectel with painted flower van.
East Mike, black riot gear. Couple carrying what appeared to be grenade launchers. They arrived in a white van and then entered a psychedelic flower painted van. And it left westbound. Juveniles and people in their late teens were also in the van they got into. That was East Madison, East Spring, information only.
Beaver 4.
Beaver 4, go ahead.
Stop that truck there.
Explore the arts this winter at League Square Community Arts Village. They're offering an exciting lineup of visual and performing arts programs this winter, including capoeira, Brazilian dance, and martial arts for 3 to 12-year-olds. Parent and taught jam sessions, the iGirl Empowerment and Art Workshop for ages 9 to 12, and adult classes in digital photo editing and photography, just to name a few. Registration is available online at experienceit.ca or call 604-927-7529 for a full listing of arts and culture programs in Port Coquitlam. For more information on Lee Square, please visit portcoquitlam.ca/arts or call 604-927-8400.
To 24 hours of radio art on CITR 101.9 FM.
I'm here with Tobias. He is the composer of the piece you just heard and the piece you're currently listening to. The last piece was Tacleron, 1991 Tacleron. Tobias, how you doing?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for joining us today. Tell us a little bit about the piece we just heard. How was it conceived?
Oh, man. So Tacleron, 1999. That piece actually comes out of police scanner recordings of the Seattle WTO protest from November 30th, 1999, the Battle of Seattle. And I obtained those police scanner recordings through nefarious means, which I do not want to go into public detail over the radio. I have hours worth of them. And what a lot of people don't know is that the back-end activist organization for Seattle 99, which effectively shut down the World Trade Organization using flying wedge protest tactics on the street, a lot of the back-end organization came out of APEC organization at UBC in 1997, fall of 1997, when I was on the CITR news team and covered APEC live using early cell phone coverage direct to air.
Wow.
So during that time, we started scanning police frequencies. So we would have an idea as to what the authorities were doing. So as reporters, we could anticipate points of confrontation or just where and how the public and engaged citizenry would engage with authorities.
Mm-hmm.
So this resulted in a number of recordings from Seattle, hours worth. And the particular section of recording there gets really interesting near the end if you pay close attention to what they're saying. The authorities are very concerned about some anarchists with potential weaponry getting in and out of a bus. And it's right when things started to get really chaotic and out of control and the protests moved up the street to Pine and Pike Hill, Capitol Hill in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And the police forces started to lose control of the situation themselves and escalate the violence. And they shot tear gas into the neighborhoods and chased people up into buildings and randomly beat people on the street. And it was quite a violent scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to use some of that audio, but try and capture some of the emotion behind that of what it's like to be on the street. and work with frequencies, radio frequencies, to express that.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with a sort of noisy composition of police scanner recordings moving in and out of the sort of tension of noise and frequency.
Going back just a second, you were covering APAC. APAC happened in, it was 97?
Yeah, 97.
97, right. So,
yeah.
And when you were covering that, you're talking about a cell phone direct to air. This is like quite early mm-hmm. use of that, as I would figure. Tell me about covering that. How did you was it just straight news reportage, or were you doing sound work with it at that point as well?
Well, for the coverage of that day, the actual day that it all went down, that was mm-hmm. Direct to air reportage.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was actually early use of cell phones. And today this sounds so ridiculous, but back then it was actually rare to have a cell phone. Most students did not. And the idea of going direct to air with a cell phone was not even put into use yet by the mainstream media. So we scooped CBC, we scooped Global, we scooped the Globe and Mail, we scooped everyone on the APAC protests, because Nardwar had cut his hair and put on a suit and got a press pass to go talk to Jean Chrétien at the news conference. And we were actually on the street at the protests around UBC, where they had blocked off campus. All the protesters had blocked off the exit roads. So the authorities had to force one group of protesters to move, and they did so using sudden and unexpected use of violence and pepper spray, this whole Sergeant Pepper incident. So we were there, and we did it. We captured it direct to air. We taped it, and then we immediately phoned Nardwar and said, Nardwar, things have gone absolutely south. And he was literally in the press conference with Chrétien at that moment, and he asked Chrétien the question about pepper spray.
I can
provoking.
Play. Right. I'm going to play that clip right yeah. now.
Oh, sick.
It's such a great moment.
By a punk band called the Nomads, called the Suharto Stomp. Earlier today as well at UBC, there were an incredible number of protesters. Do you think, Mr. Chrétien, if you were, say, 40 years younger, that you too would be writing punk songs and protesting against APAC?
But for me, in a democracy, people protest. I've been protested a few times in my lifetime, and with a lot of people at times. That's democracy. I did that myself too when I was a student. And now I'm no more a student. But I accept the fact that people will protest, and we had organized an area where they could express their views. And but at the same time, we had to run the meeting properly.
Do you think, though, that mace equals freedom? Some of the protesters were maced.
What do you say?
Some of the protesters were maced. Does mace equal freedom? Would you have been maced yourself back then, Prime Minister Chrétien?
But I don't know what you mean by that.
A mace? Pepper spray? Some other members
of
the media?
Oh, but I don't know. This technique did not exist in those days. For me, pepper, I put it on my plate.
There it is.
That is the clip. I mean, what had happened is Chrétien had not been briefed. His staff did not know as to the unfolding of the situation. He was downtown. The rest of the world leaders were at UBC, and they didn't know this had happened. So Nardwar completely scooped him, and that clip went international. Mm-hmm. They played it alongside the video footage of people getting beaten and pepper sprayed. And for the record, mace and pepper spray certainly did exist in Chrétien's time. I have
talking about?
I have no idea.
So tell me a little bit, when you're reporting that too, what was it that struck you that sort of, or at least, yeah, lay out maybe a little bit of how that inspired this later work with the, you know, Seattle World Trade Organization protests. What was it with the energy, or was it the sounds that you were hearing? What really got you interested?
Yeah, I mean, like, focusing just on, like, the sound of protests, like, thinking about radio art and how the radio is a sort of artistic transmission system, especially on a day like this, you know, today is the day of radio art, when we celebrate radio as this means to communicate otherworldly sound and disrupt frequency. By the time it came around to Seattle, I'd already been doing radio artwork through CITR at that point. There's been a great tradition of radio art at CITR for many years. So when it came to dealing with the recordings, and it's sort of like bringing together two sides of like what I do, both the sort of journalistic critical reportage side, the analytical side, and then the creative noise, sonic frequency, exploratory side, and bringing those two things together at once. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what radio art is really best at doing. I mean, that piece that you played was designed for radio broadcast. It was designed to be played on the radio, not just to take like a police scanner recording and play that on the radio, which would be unsettling enough because you'd be like, have I turned into a radio station or have I actually come across a police band? But, you know, to make it obvious that it is an art piece, that it's being manipulated. To take the sound and like use that noise to express the tension, because I think if you've never been in a major protest before, I think it's that tension and fear and excitement that are all wrapped up at once. Whether you're there as an activist or there as a reporter.
Mm-hmm. And there's something interesting, too, about capturing it from the side of the authorities in a way, where you're getting mm-hmm. their anxiety over it. And I think that's really empowering in a lot of ways. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to the concept of Art's Birthday and its connection to the Fluxus movement, because that's kind of a really integral part of radio art that sometimes it's a history that gets forgotten.
Yeah, absolutely. I was lucky enough. I mean, I don't know if he's coming in today. I don't know the relationship with CITR right now, but Hank Bull.
We had a piece from him earlier today.
Fantastic. So he used to come in and roast hot dogs on air. That was one thing. He had a piece of wire that he had rigged up to plug into the electrical socket, and it would crackle and spark, and he'd roast a hot dog in the studio. So it was actually meeting Hank Bull, meeting Peter Cormash, meeting a couple of the other people who are associated with Fluxus, this crazy 1960s era and beyond art movement, who really pioneered some audio art, experimental audio and radio art, dating back to the 60s. Those encounters, really inspired me at CITR. Not only that though, I used to tune into CITR in the early 90s, and there was a show called Limp Sync on Friday nights from 12 to 6 a.m. By Dr. Kildare and the G42 Players. And they did a lot of tape loop experiments and played a lot of industrial and experimental music and did a lot of crazy call-in kind of talk show, very improvised kind of radio. And, you know, at 4 or 5 in the morning, CITR can get really heavy and strange, and I hope it still does.
Mm-hmm.
so there's, you know, I actually went on to inherit that radio show in like the late 90s, mm-hmm. and kept it up until I left. And that kind of aura of late night radio, of when anything can happen and when it's completely improvised and you don't know what you're hearing, and then the music can be a mixture of sources, and half of it's being made in the studio with tape loops and or remixes, and you know, half of it's being played off sources. And I think radio is a very potent force. You know, it's a force that captures your ears and forces you to imagine your own kind of visuals, your own visuals for it, really. Yeah, you have to put your own like imagination to use. That's mm-hmm. what I love about it.
Bill Mullen, who's another CITR radio art alumni, has said that it's often it's the responsibility of campus community stations to fluctuate between covering art and outright being art. How can you sort of walk this line? And is it a line worth walking?
good on Bill. I think that's an excellent statement to make. Obviously when you're programming, you divide that programming up a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're running your news program, that's the news program. That's your critical reportage or covering art. On a day like today, the radio art day, you mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the ambiguity of that line is where it gets interesting. You know, like this interview shouldn't be a normal interview. This should be a radio art inspired interview. There should be noise in the background. It should be a little bit unsettling. It's totally improvised. I don't know what you're asking. This is all great. You know, this is real call-in live radio. So I think, you know, radio art really plays that line. I mean, you can compose pieces of radio art and then play them on dedicated broadcasts. And that's what I do to this day. And that's what my label does too. But yeah, the ambiguity of that line, especially in a live situation, I think that's really powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting into the studio and like improvising.
Tell me about some of the projects you're working on now, what you have coming up. So you have this label you're working on and
Yeah, so I run a label called IO Sound, which just sort of, we just release very strange projects on an intermittent schedule on cassette these days quite a bit, although we've done a lot of CD and digital, a little bit of vinyl. And yeah, so upcoming, you know, it's interesting. I'm now trawling my archives. I've undergone a major deep dive back into boxes of cassette tapes dating back to the CITR era, from running the Noise Show for many years. Mm. And I want to archive this and preserve it and disseminate it. So the next couple releases are actually going to be pulling from these archives. Some of it's going to be remixed and reformulated and created into new releases. Some of it captures live performances, so I'm going to release that as is. But yeah, I mean, it's sometimes it's good to really put yourself forward and be like, I need to compose new work. And sometimes when you have a body of it that's never seen the light of day, maybe except for one performance or one broadcast, it's important to start archiving it to let people know as to the history of this kind of work over time.
Mm-hmm. I was really struck by that listening to 1991 Tacloron, that there's this sense of it being this archive, you know, in its own right, that you kind of tuned in into and been able to play around with. And I think the potency of the archive is something yeah, really, really important, I think. What is that process been like for you going back through the crates? How long has that been going on?
Yeah, it's kind of been a process that intensified this past fall. Sometimes you have personal reasons in your life that force you to pull boxes out of the basement and open them up and be like, what is in here?
Mm-hmm.
As you sort of get rid of the flotsam and jetsam and the extra things that you accumulate. And then you're like, wait a minute, these archives I cannot get rid of. So I started listening to them. I've had to hunt down a functioning mini disc player. I'm still unable to find a functioning cart player, like an 8-track player, because I've worked on CITR that's on 8-track.
Wow.
They're gone now from CITR. I came in last year hunting down 8-tracks and they just do not exist. It's a eBay hunt now, but yeah, so part of it is the mediums too. Like I need to find like players for like old mediums that no longer exist. Mm-hmm. And like, and then listening to it, man, this is so many memories that get dragged up, right? Like mm-hmm. It's like watching old home videos, you know, like when you were a child, like you can just suddenly lose hours just getting sucked back, you know, into this temporal past. Mm-hmm. And that's what the audio feels like. But this is crate digging. This is a different kind of crate digging. It's like a memory archive process. And it's kind of a remix culture thing to look towards the past, to like reinvent new futures, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
To grab at that and imagine how it's going to sound today. Because the context is different now for a lot of this work.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about what we're hearing right now. This is Thunderclap.
All right, Thunderclap. This was an improvised performance at a really cool sound art performance space and research space in Amsterdam called Steim, STEIM.NL. And they have sound art residencies that you can apply for and check out. And I used to go there for a couple of years. And so this improvised performance is with Michel van Kausch. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name correctly, MVK.
Mm-hmm.
And we were working with a really obscure analog synthesizer that I literally found in one of their rooms that when I Googled it, I realized it was worth like tens of thousands of dollars. And it was just like sitting in a corner. It had like wires sticking out of it and like a strange pegboard thing and dials. And like this thing was from the early 1960s. Mm. So the screaming sounds they were hearing are coming out of me improvising with the synthesizer, which I think only was half operational, and then MBK is running processing these sounds digitally at the same time and running it through a whole bunch of Max MSP patches, like his own software patches that are reconstructing it. And then there's parts of it too where I'm actually working with turntables using Tractor Scratch, so like a digital turntable interface, but I'm taking the live feed of the synthesizer and the effects, running it into the decks so I can actually manipulate samples live using turntable technique and using that as like a mixological performance apparatus. So we did a couple hours of recording, and I just ended up releasing two cassette tapes of it. It's very strange stuff. Some of it is more listenable than others.
I think we're going to let ourselves be kind of drowned out by this now. Tobias, thanks so much for the interview. I really appreciate it. And
thank you.
Yeah, Tobias is the founder of 24 Hours of Radio Art here on CITR.
Co-founder.
And this is Thunderclap. Thanks so much, Tobias.
Thank you.
24 hours of radio art.